Good evening, everybody, and welcome tonight to Chapel Hills, NRD, to the Ad Hoc Consultant Selection Subcommittee for Request for Proposals and Professional Services to Update the Papio on the Jurisdictional and Multi-Hazard Mitigation Plan. Before we start our meeting, I have the Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act of Nebraska Revision State Statute 84-1407 through 84-14 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce that the procedure that will be used for this meeting will respect each other's agenda item. The directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to them. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Quorum call.
Bradley. Craig Conley.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Weiss. Thompson, alternate.
Oh, I am here.
I guess he's here tonight.
And chairperson.
Here. Item 5, proof of publication, which I have in my hand, dated 2nd of August. Item 6, review recommendation of professional services, contract, and, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Craig Conley?
Aye.
And chairperson.
Aye. Item 6, review and recommendation of professional services contract with JEU Consulting Group, Inc. Lori Lassiter.
Good evening. So last month we received proposals from JEU Consulting Group, a proposal from JEU to update the district's hazard mitigation plan. They were the only firm to submit proposals, and so the board voted to waive policy and to go directly to contract negotiation rather than the interview process. So we've been working with JEO over the last month to put together the scope of the project and the fee. The first task would be to prepare a grant application to FEMA to actually pay for the plan update itself. FEMA's grant program will pay 75% of the cost, leaving the district with 25% of that local match. And so they would start that this fall, and we would anticipate then a notification of award if the application was successful next spring, when the project will actually start to kick off. Beyond that, there will be quite a bit of public involvement and stakeholder engagement, certainly with all of the communities within the district. We'll try to pull in as many as we can and hopefully get a few more than we did last time. I believe we have about 37 out of 60 communities participated last time, so we'd like to improve that number. So we're looking to do some additional outreach for that. They'll also be looking at risk assessment, several natural hazard risks, not just flooding, but wildfire, chemical spills, fixed chemical sites, if something were to happen there. Drought, so a lot of different disasters they'll be looking at, and how those will impact each individual community will have a financial impact, and as well as the kind of civic impact is for each community. They'll write the plan and submit it to FEMA and the state for review and approval. This will all have to, so we'll start writing the plan in 19 and go through the spring of 2020. And we have to have that approved in 2021 by FEMA and adopted by all the participating communities. As part of this too, we have three communities in the district that participate in the community rating system with the National Flood Insurance Program for implementing higher floodplain management standards than the federal minimums. Their constituents get discounts on their flood insurance premiums. The City of Valley, the City of Omaha, and the City of Papillion all participate. With Omaha and Papillion, that is a substantial number of policies within the district. And they each get, both of those communities get a 15% discount currently on flood insurance policies. We are going to try to take some additional steps. Part of the hazard mitigation plan allows there's a certain number of points that they that the communities can get for having a compliant hazard mitigation plan. So we're going to try to get those communities up to a 20% discount if we can through this plan. Working with JEO, we did negotiate the fee at $199,902, which is an update from the memo that says $200,000. And with that, I can answer any questions. I also have Becky Appleford here from JEO, who is the project manager for JEO.
You want to read the recommendations?
Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the board that the general manager be authorized to execute a professional services contract with JEO Consulting Group, Inc. to update the district's multi-hazard mitigation plan for a maximum fee of $199,902.31, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to formed by district legal counsel.
Motion
to
adopt.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Anybody in the public want to speak to this? Anybody? Directors?
How much was it last
time? Last time was $150,000. And that did not include the grant application or the community rating system.
And what is the possibility of us getting a FEMA grant for 75%?
Fairly good. There's a certain amount of planning money that they set aside through their grant programs. There are three, and a certain portion of those are always set aside for plans.
Mm-hmm.
Because of everything that happened last year, there's quite a bit more money that we are expecting to be in those grant programs this year. And part of that is, some of them are nationally competitive, but the hazard mitigation grant program is state only. So we would only be competing with other plans in the state, which there are not really that many that would be competing against.
What other advantages are there to communities participate in this program besides lower insurance premiums? Or is that basic?
So the community rating system program, that's kind of separate, and that is only for flood insurance premiums. To participate in the hazard mitigation planning, that allows communities to then apply for grants through FEMA for projects that have been identified. So, for instance, what we see a lot of projects in rural areas are culverts and bridges that we know are undersized. These roads wash out every time we get 2 inches of rain. We know they need to be upsized. There's a potential that if we identify those projects in this plan, that community can then apply for a grant to have 75% of that cost covered.
And there's no cost to the communities to involve themselves with this? Or?
No.
Thank you.
Any other directors?
Hearing none, roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Yes. That is it. Over to you, Director, Chairperson Conley.
Okay, I'm calling to order the Program Projects and Operations Subcommittee. A copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted at the back of the room. We heard that previously. Now I move to quorum call, please.
Fred Conley?
Here.
Lady?
Here.
Caesar?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Here. Item 4 is the adoption of the agenda.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Leahy?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Sure.
Yes. I have here an affidavit of proof of publication of tonight's meeting notice, and that'll go into our permanent records. Now moving to item 6, the review and recommendation on agreement with Department of Army for the Papillion Creek Feasibility Study. Amanda Grint, please.
Well, John mentioned this last month.
believe. This is pretty amazing. This is an agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers to study the flood risk reduction and habitat restoration for the Papillion Creek watershed. So the back history of this, and I'm sure you probably have heard this a million times, but you know, of course, there was a resolution to put together a comprehensive plan back in the 60s for the Papillion Creek watershed. And so the Corps was implementing that plan. It was put together. They were implementing that plan, and four of the 21 flood control structures, so you've heard the 21 dams, that plan, four of those were constructed by the Corps of Engineers before it was deauthorized due to lack of local support. And from there, the Papio entities kind of picked that up and continued building the flood control reservoirs. So through a huge effort, John and Marlin and the agencies, it was determined that it was not actually completely deauthorized, as we had thought, and that the feasibility and the planning portion of that study was still open. And so they realized that it was still open to be studied. They realized they had money, and so everyone acted very quickly to put together an agreement that you see in front of you for consideration tonight. So this agreement is to take engineering, economic, and environmental data to assess the Papillion Creek watershed, and to do that over a three-year period for a maximum of $3 million, and the district contribution would be a maximum of 50% of that, $1.5 million. So the agreement outlines those maximum amounts, and then it talks about, you know, up front there's some money, that $25,000 that the district pays. But what we've informally discussed is that, and what we have budgeted for the next fiscal year, is this first year would be about $500,000. The next fiscal year for us would be when the majority of the work is done, about $700,000 or a big part, and then $300,000 in the last year. But that's all depending on, you know, there's so much data for the Papillion Creek watershed that we're really hopeful that the study doesn't take 3 years. And so we'll work with them on the budgeting for that. But we do have to approve this agreement by September. And so we wanted to make sure that we had enough time to do that and enter into this agreement. And so what this really does, I mean, entering into a feasibility study with the Corps of Engineers opens up a whole new possibility of funding for the construction of these reservoirs that we just have not seen since the 60s and then, you know, in the 80s, I guess, they built some reservoirs. So really exciting. But if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
I'd like to get a motion on the floor, please.
Move staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Second.
I have a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Leahy.
A couple questions. My understanding was, when we talked about this previously, that we have done a lot of the studies already, so they just need to review some of what we've already done. Does that count as sort of like in kind towards any of these costs when they're looking at our studies and then don't have to go out there and get that data again?
It does, in the way of, if it takes less than $3 million for them to complete the study, then we pay 50% of that. And we do, like, we have brand new hydrology and hydraulics for the whole watershed, which you guys have seen how big those contracts are. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of information that we have already. So I suspect it will be less, and I suspect it will be shorter. I couldn't say for sure. This is kind of their standard three-year, $3 million for feasibility studies.
And they'll determine how long it takes and what of our previous study information they find useful?
Yes. So the way their feasibility studies work, there's this overarching agreement that you have the copy of to review for tonight. And then once that gets signed by both parties, you go and it's kind of like a, I can't remember what they call it, but like a project implementation type of plan, or when you really sit down and like scope out, what do we have? How long is it going to take? Who's going to do all the work? You know, that, and they lay that out, and then that's the next step, and then after that, they actually move forward on the
field. In our discussions with the Corps at headquarters level and district level, they expect this to take less than 3 years. But to be conservative, they wanted to get the full $3 million just in case. And so that's why you think you see the whole $3 million.
A couple of just sort of follow-up questions. When we sit down and just sort of do that scope, do they do their own studies in-house, or do they go get a contractor, subcontractor like FIRA or HDR or any of those other firms?
They do both. And that's up to them, and that's part of what this agreement says, is that that's up to them to decide how they want to do that work. They do have a list of contractors and consultants that they use, and they do a lot in-house, depending on their schedule.
So they could be using contractors that we use for the studies, which should make it go quicker. Then last question is, I understand this because it gives us the potential to have another gift fall in our lap, so I understand the need to sort of move quickly on it, but... will we get reimbursed, or will there be any cost share for this study from the other members of the Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership? Because, I mean, they benefit just as much as we do and as the Corps does. You know, I'm thinking Douglas County, City of Omaha, and all those other communities that are part of the partnership. Like, how come there's not the typical cost share that we see with the PCWP?
Yeah, I will. We have not asked them to do that yet. We have asked them to pay for the hydraulics and the hydrology, a portion of that. We've asked them to pay for part of a water quality plan that we'll talk about a couple items down. And we've asked them to pay for the stream, part of the stream degradation study with the Corps that could be all brought into this too. So really it's more, I mean, there just isn't that much money in that fund for them to do that. And we have just decided to act.
And it's a timing issue. This has to be approved by this board and the Corps by the end of September, or we lose the money and you'll never get it. This is one in a million shot. You do it and you walk away forever. This will not come.
Any other questions or comments, please? Actually, give somebody else a chance. You've had three questions. Director Jett.
Just real quickly. So at the very end of the 3 years when they're completed their study, they'll present to us some sort of booklet or pamphlet, and they'll explain exactly what they found and what they recommend doing, and the funding issues and so forth will be answered? Or
the funding issues, I am not sure. I mean, that will be looked at. I don't know that that will be – they'll have federal funding lined up for this at the end of that. But, yes, there is a report. I mean, their deliverables are a report, an outcome report from this study.
And they'll present that to the board?
I'm sure that they would.
It'll be 3 inches thick, so, or less than. That's the 3x3x3. But we're already.
I cannot believe that. But.
So, but we are already meeting with the Corps at headquarters and district, and also with our congressional delegation to already plan for the next step of trying to acquire funds. So we're already trying to open those doors to get that lined up for the next step in bringing in revenue to build these projects. So that's going on. In fact, I have a meeting with Congressman Bacon's staff to do a tour tomorrow. So. Assuming he wins.
Yeah, so you know, you have a feasibility study and you've got six projects that have 60% plans. You're set up as good as you're ever going to be. You know?
Yep.
Any other questions or comments? No, Director Lenny, you got another question?
No, I'll wait until Thursday. I'll spur them out.
Right. Seeing no other questions, roll call on the motion, please.
Beaver?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Blakey?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Amanda. Now we're going on to, professional services agreement with HDR Engineering for Zirinsky Basin 2.
Maybe the map, Bill, if you don't mind. As you know, we've been working on Zirinsky Basin 2. It's under construction right now. And our contract for design and construction administration has been with HDR Engineering. And if we could scooch, I'm going to look at this side, Bill, if you can move the map over. There you go. Thank you. Perfect. So this is tonight. For your consideration is a contract amendment with HDR to revise the mitigation plan that goes along with the 404 permit, the stream mitigation plan. And we can just go back to that map. And you can just leave it on there. Now this is good. Thank you. But the amendment is kind of part of a bigger picture, so I want to give you the bigger picture of what's going on. So this is the basin right here, basically, and this is some brand new developments that are going on, Grandview and Blue Sage Creek. So the stream mitigations, the normal pool of Zirinsky Basin ends at this dotted line here, And all of your mitigation has to be above the normal pool in order for it to count for the 404 permit. So we had planned to do mitigation in these channels right here. However, the mitigation requires, you know, pretty extensive channel work. I mean, we would take down all the trees and regrade the channel and stabilize it and do rock checks and a lot of that work, of which the adjacent landowner and development was unaware when we purchased this land that that's what was going to happen there. So they were really concerned about that mitigation being there and the impacts that it would have on the surrounding development. And some representatives from this is Atlantaha Development, Blue Sage Creek, are here this evening and will address you, I believe, during the public comment period, or if you have questions. But the contract amendment tonight includes a revision to the 404 permit and then an update of construction documents to kind of remove this area from the construction of Zirinsky Basin 2. And it has some additional survey and construction contract administration. And so the bigger picture of this is that we would move the mitigation from on-site at Zirinsky Basin 2 to a location at Dam Site 15A, which is upstream of State Street. And so the amendment is to do a lot of survey and redesign up there, and then we would sell back this portion of land that we bought to the adjacent developer. The benefit that we see in that is there had always been a thought that we could do a mitigation bank up at 15A. It's a really beautiful, nice area to do that, and we have all the land secured. So these are just kind of some smaller tributaries in the midst of urban development. It's not the best place for mitigation. If we can put that out at 15A, it really makes a much bigger, more comprehensive mitigation bank that's better for environment, habitat, and those things rather than just these little pieces in the midst of the urban area. So that's the benefit, and that's what we have proposed tonight. So the motion is to, or the recommendation is to execute a contract amendment with HDR, and the total of that amendment is $107,700, and that brings their contract total to just over $1.4 million to do this additional work. And then the other pieces that are part of the bigger picture, the land sale, if you chose to do that, would come in the following months.
Thank you, Amanda. The chair to entertain a motion.
Before I entertain a motion, Amanda, you just said the sale would be another amendment? But I didn't quite hear
what you said. It'd be just another action by the board in the following months. So we want to make sure that the design will work before we do that final transaction.
Before we sell the land.
Yeah.
So it would not be appropriate to create that in the motion right now?
I don't think so.
Okay.
We have gotten verbal approval from the Corps to do that, and they met us on site at 15A. So we feel real good about it. It's just that we kind of want their written okay before we make the land sale.
So in this, well, let's get
a motion before we discuss it. I'd like to get a motion on the floor if I could before we discuss it.
Motion staff, move staff recommendation.
Is there a second?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's discuss the details. Anyone in the public wish to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, and members of the board that are here in attendance tonight. My name is Larry Jobin, 11440 West Center Road, appearing on behalf of the developer, which is Atlantaha Development. With me tonight is Jason Atlantaha. Atlantaha Development also with me tonight is Terry Atkins of Lampreneers and the consulting engineers on this Blue Sage Creek project. So, as Amanda indicated, we entered into a voluntary sale, if you will, for approximately 25 acres of property that was represented. I don't know if you have that map up, but I have a better map that I'll give you. I only have one copy, but at least you can pass it around. So we entered into a voluntary sale of approximately 25 acres in this particular area. We were unaware at the time that it would require this channel mitigation on the southern side of the channel. I've got an aerial photograph here that I'd make part of the record. You can see it maybe a little bit better, but what we didn't realize is that it involved the removal of about 5-6 acres of trees. And unfortunately, I as you know, maybe Blue Sage Creek is the Street of Dreams development. These lots, I'll hand this out to you too. This is a plat that shows the area up here as far as the Blue Sage Creek area. As you can see, there are single family lots that are surrounding this particular area. It's about 6.3 acres that we're looking to repurchase. But what we didn't know when we sold this is that they were going to have these 5 to 6 acres of tree removal. These lots were all committed by builders, and some were actually sold to third-party purchasers based upon them being treed lots. So we kind of got put in a pickle here. And so we contacted Amanda and Mr. Winkler, of course, all immediately upon finding out that there was a potential removal of 5 to 6 acres of mature trees affecting 20 single-family lots. And also, if you notice, it's right along F Street as well, so it's really the kind of main entrance into Blue Sage Creek. So as you're going down F Street, instead of having these 5 to 6 acres of mature trees, all of a sudden now you have no trees and just a barren channel. So obviously that would very negatively impact this particular development. Would also jeopardize the commitments and the promises that were made as far as these being treed lots and the way they were marketed. So we really appreciate this solution. We're in support of it. It would allow us to repurchase about 6.307 acres back at the same purchase price. And then, of course, we'll leave the trees intact and be able to live up to the promises that we made to these builders and home buyers in this particular development. So with that, we're happy to answer any questions. Again, Mr. Lanaha is here, and so Mr. Atkins is here to answer any questions.
Here, Karen. Open it up for questions by directors.
I always have. Is there no opposition to the litigation at Flanagan, as there is at Turinsky? Well, we own this too, but we're getting opposition here. But I'm saying, is there opposition at Flanagan? Or would there be potentially be that same opposition there as what we're getting here? Somebody owns it, though. How far is Flanagan from this? The mitigation at Flanagan will be sufficient to do what we need to do here, 10 miles away?
Director Leahy.
Yep. Two questions. So the mitigation side, it's not going to affect any plots of lands for homes. It's just affecting what they see in their backyard, the trees, right?
Correct. Okay. Yes. I mean, it's all within that outlot. I mean, we as part of this agreement, and had we known that 5 to 6 acres worth of trees would have been removed, it wouldn't have been a voluntary sale. I mean, just it would have impacted this development so dramatically as far as the character of the neighborhood in affecting 20 lots and the entryway into the development that we could never have agreed to voluntarily do this, which then would have been eminent domain. Again, we were trying to work with the NRD, and the NRD was working with us. Unfortunately, we were just unaware that this channel mitigation was going to require the removal of this many trees. So, yes, they would all be within that outlot and not directly in the backyards. But obviously, these are mature tree canopy that would leave this area completely barren of about 5 to 6 acres.
Yeah, and the actual lot lines butt up against these trees. I mean, these trees come right up to the property, so it's not like it's something off in the distance.
Yeah. But it doesn't affect the actual lot.
Oh, of course not. No, absolutely not. It does affect it from a marketability and price standpoint, though. Yeah. It doesn't physically affect the boundaries of the lot.
Yeah. And then question of pure ignorance. There's probably no way to do the keep the trees and do the mitigation. Is there any?
We looked at that.
Advance. That was my first look. So it's not a totally dumb question.
No. Believe me, it was a shotgun approach. As far as the solutions, we were looking at everything and anything we could possibly do to save these trees.
I've got a question for you regarding the plat map. If you're going to square this thing off, roughly, and with adding 6 acres or more or less in there. You're going to do a replat then in that area?
That's a good question. If we have to do that, we can do that, and we can probably do it administratively. That is the area that we repurchased, and it's the 6.307 acres.
And what would that become?
It's just an outlot, unbuildable.
An unbuildable, and you're willing to stipulate to that?
Oh, yeah, it's correct. An outlot in my definition.
Because you gain some potentially prime property there.
No. We can't do anything down in the watershed.
No, we couldn't actually remove those trees under the city zoning ordinances. We would have to mitigate them if we took them down. There's no intent to do that. We've already made the representation to the various builders and the homeowners that are going to buy these homes that these trees were going to be there. So there's no way we're going to do that.
and just to be clear, we'd be happy to put that in writing on any form of document, whatever would be.
You're on the record here.
Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I have one other concern, that we're going to spend $107,000 to make this thing happen. We're approving a contract with HDR. I feel you have an obligation to reimburse us for those expenses, and are you willing to do that?
I guess what I would say about that is it was a misunderstanding from the beginning as far as this transaction was concerned. You know, again, had we known, you might have heard those costs actually using the power of eminent domain if you decided to go down that path. Maybe we wouldn't have gone down that path if there was the need for eminent domain in the first place. So in my thought, and listening to Mr. Winkler and Amanda, is that maybe you have a much, much better channel mitigation opportunity at Flanagan Lake or 15A anyway. So we're hopeful that we're making the district whole in with respect to the purchase or the repurchase of the property that was acquired. We're hopeful that there's enough benefit that you have in mitigating at Flanagan or dam site 15A that would offset that. You know, I guess we don't want to come out of pocket more than we have to. We're looking at, I mean, the purchase price for us to repurchase it is about $315,350, I think, if we do the math correctly. So it's a pretty substantial investment to reacquire property that, remember, we can't use. It's a treed area. It's an outlot. It's not buildable. There's really not a lot of value to us other than the promises that we made to the various people that we sold lots to. So this is sort of a trying to get us back to where we were in the beginning. So with that, you know, I guess I can't speak for Jason and his family as far as the additional.
This looks like you're picking up, from your standpoint, a prime piece of real estate because it enhances your property, and we're spending $107,000 to move off site. I'm not so comfortable with that. It's just one direct, but I'd like to see it go ahead. But I think we're being unfairly forced to compensate this. Any other comments on this? Director Jeff.
How much was it, the purchase price to rebuy it again?
It's $315,000.
$50,000 an acre, right?
Yeah, $50,000 an acre, and so we're buying 6.307 acres back, so it's $315,350.
Thank you. Any other questions, Jim?
So, oops.
Yeah.
No. When Dave, I assume, signed the contract, or
well, we weren't. He signed it, but we weren't aware of any of it.
Well, who's the boss? Don't answer that.
Well, let me rephrase that. Through none of the process were we aware of it. That's why, back to Mr. Jovan's comment, if we would have known there were channel mitigation occurring here, no way. And like you said, it would probably...
Well, or the channel mitigation required the removal of 5 to 6 acres of mature trees. I mean, that's the issue here. You know, if you could somehow mitigate the channel and keep the trees, well, we wouldn't be here. We'd be probably okay with that. But the fact that there is a complete destruction of this mature tree canopy next to a very nice subdivision with very expensive homes going in and very expensive lots on commitments that were already made, that these were treed lots and they were marketed on that basis, that really leaves us in a really bad spot.
So
it's a noose.
You had mentioned the city wouldn't let you remove them anyway.
No, the city would not.
Because we are who we are in mitigation, we've got the authority to mitigate. Now, the new site on Flanagan Lake, which is 15A, we already own that land. So in essence, we'd be a couple hundred dollars in ahead should we proceed with it.
We're making you whole with respect to our transaction. And again, had we known this, we
but probably... But from what we act on now and what we act on when we mitigate Flanagan Lake area, what comes after that is a procedure to sell property. And we've got our procedures to do that as well, which we can make happen.
Right.
When we sell government property. I mean, that's not just an easy, hey, give me a purchase, give me a check. So we have to go through that process, which will come, assuming this passes and all that. Yes, yeah, these guys will make it happen quicker because, you know, even though Larry's on hourly retainer, it's probably he would make it happen quicker.
On this one, I will rush it through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Thompson, if I may add something.
No. So. It's only 6.3 acres, you say?
Yes, 3.07.
So where, and I assume, Amanda, wherever it ended, as far as the creek, that's really, because it's mitigation labeled, I guess, it doesn't affect the dam site and the water flow and everything like
right.
that.
So we proposed a boundary that right after these two drainage ways so that we know that would be the responsibility to go back to the center. Here's our normal pool with this dashed line.
Now, explain this is going to be assuming everything works out, no longer our land. Access in, or the water flow into that creek comes from their property then. And is there any work to do there, or is that's up to them to make sure they don't dam it up or anything like that, which, you know.
Yeah, so they have post-construction sediment basically locations that collect water. The only thing, if this goes through and we are not going to be the owner of that property anymore, the only thing we may do is go remove the dead trees that are already down so they don't wash. But after that, the responsibility is required.
Okay, so the sediment basins would not be our construction costs
no.
or anything like that. That'd be the development costs. Okay. Any other construction costs we're going to save on this?
So we, you know, we'll change our fencing plan, seating, you know, so, and we haven't dollar for dollar figured all that out, but it does change, you know, the limits of our project. So it'll change a number of things. It'll cut some costs, and then we'll change our, those costs into the work that's done at
Flanagan
Lake. Should this all work out. So
it might be a trade-off on construction costs.
Yeah, so the mitigation work that would have been done here will be subtracted from the contract and what we come up with for design after this contract amendment, and then that would be the difference of the cost.
Up further up, there's a rectangle. It looks like a sewer outlet coming in. Yeah.
So we did not purchase this. This is our line. It's a post-construction stormwater that collects water.
But it's Lanahaw land. Okay, is there anything in construction that they have to do or did do that we have to shake hands on in the future with that?
We do have to coordinate. We have some things. They have a pedestrian bridge that'll cross. We have a rock structure through there. So we'll be coordinating, but there's nothing like this.
So in good faith, they may put in a really nice pedestrian bridge.
We plan on that, actually. It's going to make a connection because you've got the elementary school up there. I don't know if you see that on the plat. Mm-hmm. There's a Elkhorn Public School up there. So this will be a nice walkway over the drainage way. It'll connect this southern part of the development into the northern part over the drainage way so the kids can access the school.
Now,
Patrick, we're paying for all that.
Excuse this dumb question, but I assume Lana knows there's no ash trees there.
I think that's probably.
Would you,
I'm done. Thank you.
Would you answer a question about, you mentioned the cleaning up of downed trees. Why is that the NRD's responsibility?
Well, and we wouldn't have to, but if we, you know, we have the construction crew out there now, and there are dead trees down in the creek, and we we take them out, that just saves us from having.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call on the motion, please.
Thompson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
Leahy?
Yes.
Easer?
Yes.
Chair Simpson?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you. Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Now we're moving on to item 8. NDEQ 319 application for Papillion Creek Watershed Enhanced Water Quality Conservation Practices Program. That's a mouthful. Justin and Amanda again.
Thank you. I'm just going to intro this and then let Justin.
She's probably out of breath by now.
Yeah. So, you know, for a couple of years, we've been working on the 319 Water Quality Plan. I know some of you have come to an open house we had a while back. So it's a district-wide plan to look at water quality and what we can do to remove impaired water bodies from our district. So we've been working on this for a number of years, and it just within the last 2 weeks was approved by EPA. And so what that means, and we can, that will be, it just got approved with a few comments, so we're going to address those comments, and then we'll post that on our website, and everyone will be able to look at that. But what that means with an approved 319 water quality plan is that in the priority area that was selected, and they like to use 25% or less of your district-wide plan as your priority area, and that means for 5 years you're going to address projects in that priority area to help water quality. And they do that because they don't want you to just do little projects all over the whole district. They want you to focus on an area and make a difference. So we chose the Papillion Creek Watershed. It's 25% of our district area, and it's where there was the money and the effort to do some projects in the next 5 years. So we chose that, and we have an approved plan, and that makes us eligible for 319 funding, that grant funding. And so I'm going to let Justin talk about our proposal for an application.
Amanda, like she said, she's really done all the legwork on this. I'm kind of going to be the implementation. So with this funding source, we still have to develop some of the practices that we want to enact. Some of those practices pretty much are all going to be related to agriculture. It's a way to kind of really address the E. coli concerns in the upper portions of the watershed. I think it kind of adds to the whole comprehensive plan of the Papillion Creek watershed where, you know, we do the flood control, we do sedimentation, now we're looking at E. coli. And some of the best ways to do that are going to be through, like, some of the CRP practices that you see through filter strips. Some of the other continuous CRP practices, we're looking at livestock exclusions. We're looking at something that's probably a little bit outside the box in septic tank systems. That can be a direct contamination source for E. coli. We're also looking at detention basins, which essentially are structures like we build. I think there is a possibility to build some dams in Washington County. Smaller structures, you know, farm ponds, not the scale that you guys are used to. I should reiterate that. Ones that you would see in people.
Amanda, we led you to
not the dam, just a dam. And then also, we're also looking at terraces. You know, obviously that's something we do a lot currently. But, you know, I think it's kind of this whole comprehensive plan. You know, there's been a lot of local work group meetings, and that will continue. We anticipate that we're going to hire a watershed coordinator. The reason we think that would be successful is it's hard for me to do everything that this is really going to take day to day. I mean, we can really help with some of the initial success and the people and the contacts that we have, but we really need somebody that's going to reach outside of that. And that's what we think a watershed coordinator will do. That's also a cost-shared position. You know, none of this stuff is set in stone. These are just all ideas that we've thrown up. But that would also be a 60-40 match. So basically they would pay 60%, we would pay 40%. That's how this entire program is set up for all these practices. I think it's something that can be very successful. It's kind of where you can reach the constituents individually with things that really can help the district as a whole. So, you know, we're looking at first year, we're looking at $150,000 for FY19 and $250,000 in 20 and 21. Obviously, there would be some more financial commitment from the NRD to do this because we are going to have to match that 100%, and that is going to be the $60,000 in FY19 and $100,000 in the following two fiscal years.
But I think it's something that could be very successful. It's just, it's going to take a lot of groundwork, which you guys have already kind of started that. But now it's, now the work begins if everything's approved.
Yeah, so applications are due to 319 on September 4th. So we're requesting approval to submit an application. All of these dollars are just only if we actually get the grant from 319 to implement the project.
Amanda, would you like to read the recommendation, please?
Sure. Staff recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the Board of Directors the general manager be authorized to execute and submit a Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality 319 application for 60% of eligible project costs for the Papillion Creek Watershed Enhanced Water Quality Conservation Practices Program, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager.
Thank you. Chair to entertain a motion.
Move a staff recommendation.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Directors. Director Leahy.
Yeah.
You were quick.
What had to be Director Jenny. What do we know, or will there be like measurables with this grant? Like, hey, we expect to reduce the E. coli by 50%, or we are going to have the staff person make sure that we have so many applications for the terraces or dams or fronting strips or whatever.
John told me not to mention this. So part of the watershed plan that you'll see, the one that was just recently approved, talks about what all we need to do to get E. coli levels to the acceptable level. And it was so hard to do, as you can imagine. We tried to, as many practices as we could even come up with modeling to put in, and it we could get there, and it's $900 million of estimated cost to get these E. coli levels down to where they need to go. So, you know, just for perspective, that's kind of what we're looking at. So this is the first step. And what we think we'll do when we lay out this program is we'll take the agriculture practices that have the highest E. coli load reduction and prioritize those. So say the top 10 things that reduce E. coli, those will be in ranking 1 through 10, how we would try to fund applications. Yep. And so we will have measurable numbers, but we don't have a couldn't say, like, at the end of this program we're going to be at 40% reduction, but we'll be able to provide what reduction we are getting. So,
I mean, all the practices have a measurable, you know, it reduces bacteria by 90%. We'll say filter strips. It's actually, they've done studies to say that filter strips along creeks and tributaries is the number one way to reduce E. coli contamination. And it's probably one of the most cost-effective, because what we're looking at doing is piggybacking that with the CRP program, where people can receive an annual payment through the CRP program, but also receive an incentive through this program to really get them over the edge and hopefully get those acres enrolled into CRP. You know, you won't have a direct contamination measurement of, you know, this is produced by this many MCLs, but you'll know that with implementing these practices, you are doing those practices. I mean, it has been proven in studies, you know, but it's hard to quantify.
And so the NDEQ does a five-year rotation around the state where they measure, you know, water quality. I don't remember when we were a few years ago, but, you know, we're in that rotation. So when they come back through the Papio Creek and they publish their data, you know, there's some real – then you can see what implementing the plan, if that's made any difference.
Just to commend staff, I mean, before when we talked about E. coli and the impaired streams, the question was, well, what are you doing to address that? And we kind of shrugged our shoulders and we just didn't have an answer. It's kind of like the hardest part of a 1,000-mile journey is the first step. And I think this is the first step into actually starting to address that. Now, we're not going to be able to fix it, obviously, overnight, but now we're starting to take the steps to start seeing if we can implement these things, if they actually have an impact, which we haven't done ever before, except shrug our shoulders and say, nah, we just violate the standard. That's all we can do.
And everything we do is 100% voluntary. So this is all going to be people that are willing and wanting to.
Any other questions or comments, please? Director Jack.
Yeah, just briefly, the 319 funding you're talking about matches up, match funds up 40%, 60,000 and 100,000. Is that the total that they'll contribute to us? So everything else that this program cost comes from the NRD then, or just?
So, so basically it's a reimbursement program. So we'll do all the expenditures up front. We'll probably have to create a special budget item because then it's easier to track. So we'll spend basically the $250,000, but then we'll request that other $150,000.
Right. And is $250,000, can you get a lot done for that?
If you're talking CRP practices and things like that, yeah, you could really do a lot.
So it could have an impact.
But and that's where I think we're going to have that ranking process. You know, hopefully we have so many applications and so much interest that we have to tell people no. I mean, ideally, at the end of the day, that would be an ideal situation. So, that's where our ranking is going to come in. I mean, just looking at it off the cuff, I would say your CRP practices would be number one. Your livestock exclusion type practices would probably fall number two. Maybe septic tank issues, three. That's not set in stone. These are just ideas that we're throwing out.
But that's enough funding to make a difference in your.
Well, we think we need to start a little slow to get a coordinator on board and get some practice, you know, get it established. Our hope is that it goes well beyond this 3 years and we continue to get 319 money to keep a coordinator and keep some good work going, you know, in the future. And then if you are successful and you show them you're spending the money, you can ask for it.
And the intent with all of our programs is to try to leverage other agencies and other programs too to enhance what we're doing. So
yeah. I mean, we could request more funds, but we just didn't want to be greedy. You know, we wanted to just start where we think we can be successful, because just like anything, if you can show the need and spend the money, well, that just gives you a reason.
You're never going to eliminate no matter what. So
no.
I'm
trying to that's kind of that 900 million.
Yeah, you're just looking at the reduction. You know? I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, you're never going to, you know, fix everything, but you try to reduce the impact.
Okay, thank you.
Are there going to be any practices in the communities or the creek traverses? Because not all the animal waste happens out in the country.
Right.
What are you going to do in the towns?
We thought this is kind of our first phase is the agriculture conservation practices. But so that's kind of our long-term goal is if you keep a water coordinator and you keep that water quality position open and you move into the towns and you do outreach and different things, maybe you move into the Cunningham watershed years down the road and you do water quality there. But there's so many places to start, you know, to go with it.
If you're looking at, like, urban practices, I mean, rain gardens, things that we're currently doing, you know, is it has an E. coli reduction. I mean, there's pet waste, but I don't even know how you would start to address some of those issues.
Well, and that, I mean, that report will say, like, we had to assume that we did enough outreach to get 30% of the people to pick up pet waste. I mean, you have to make some big jumps to get numbers.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Director Teaser.
So when I'm pheasant hunting in Washington County and my dog poops in the creek, is he or me going to get in trouble?
It depends on how self-reported you
are. Any other questions?
You've got to bring a plastic bag.
That's just common courtesy.
Roll call on the motion, please.
Fred.
Aye.
Whitney?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for taking it easy on my inaugural board presentation.
Inaugural.
Next is Eric Williams. We're going to talk about bee cycles in Bellevue.
Great. Good evening, directors. We received a letter from Mayor Sanders from Bellevue. It's page 2, Bill. Highlighting their proposed bee cycle program. We have a bee cycle station here at the office. It's the gray dock with the bicycles out front, and it's been very successful, and that is part of a more comprehensive network across the metro area. Bill, can you pull up heartland.beecycle.com? There's a map there. And there are about 33 stations across the metro area. Most of them are in the urban area inside of 680 and I-80 and are connected for kind of a transportation network. Our station was kind of a newer version of what B-Cycle is working towards, and that's a recreation-based station. If you zoom out a couple clicks on that map, so you can see, could go. So you can see most of them are kind of downtown, midtown. There's some over by Exarban, is that little cluster. And then if you scroll, Bill, south and west, there you go. You can see two more stations that are not kind of connected to the rest of them. That's 84th Street on the West Papio Creek and Trail in Papillion, and here at Chalco. Those two were installed last year as kind of recreation-based bike share installations, and that's what Bellevue is now proposing farther down West Papio and the Bellevue Loop Trail to have a bike share facility available on trails that we have constructed on the levees to let people have access to bicycles if they don't have one or they aren't able to transport theirs to the recreation facilities. So Mayor Sanders sent this letter to us. We have talked with the Parks Department and Planning Department from Bellevue about this project for the last couple years. Initially, it was planned to be a station like ours at the 36th Street Culver's Trailhead. They kind of adjusted their plans a little bit, and B-Cycle now has a new option, which is what they call the Dash Bicycle. It's not a dock or a station-based B-Cycle program, but it's a bicycle that has a Bluetooth connectivity with your phone from a mobile app built into the head of the bicycle. And so you walk up to the bicycle and unlock it. You could check out the bicycle and ride it around and then lock it again with your phone when you're done. And it doesn't have to go back to the same dock or even another dock. It can just be basically anywhere. It can be GPS fenced so that if you leave it anywhere in this area, then you don't get a charge. If you take it out, you ride it to your house, you know, 5 miles away from the destination or the intended location, then you would have a little fee. So it's kind of a new version of what they call like bike share 3.0, kind of depends who you talk to, but it's just a way to have more recreation facilities available to more people and building on the success of both the B-Cycle program in the metro area and the trail network that we've spent years and lots of dollars building along the natural resources of the creeks. So Bellevue is asking for us to provide 50% cost share. There's a breakdown of the cost and the quote that they have from B-Cycle on there. It does say confidential line. Let's just move kind of quickly past that. It's in your program. But if you have any specific questions about the quote, we can look back at that. This map shows the two locations where they would target the locations, the initial placement of the bicycles. One is Hayworth Park down there by the Missouri River, and the other is a very small red area, again, at 36th Street, where the West Papio meets the Big Papio or Keystone Trail. And then the last map shows a route along trails that the NRD has constructed. A starts at Hayworth Park and then goes down along the Missouri River, out the end of the Papio Creek system, back up along that Bellevue Loop, past Offutt, and then turns and goes west over toward the trailhead at Culver's there. So that would be about a 13-mile ride between the two intended locations where the bikes would be positioned originally and would be fenced. It is essentially designed to provide additional access to the recreation facilities we already have. This is a 50% cost share request, and so we are recommending that we include this in the budget to provide half the cost of this installation. From the map, Bill, that we had pulled up, the recreation-based station here, there are on the other window. There are 33 stations. Five of them are very close to the Missouri River. They're tough to tell from the others, but five of them are very close to the Missouri River. By far, the most popular is the Bob Carey Bridge. Second is one of them that's very close to the Bob Carey Bridge, and then about three more in kind of the downtown area. Out of the other 28 stations, ours all the way out here as a recreation destination-based station is the next most popular by a pretty good margin. So we have significantly outperformed what we had expected from this station. We thought this might be something we'd have to kind of help along and there might be some sponsorship needed. This station has generated more trips than any other station in the network, save the ones right at the riverfront, and is actually helping to fund, through rental fees that come with this, some of the other stations. So it's been very, very successful. And so both Bellevue and B-Cycle are very interested in seeing this same type of recreation-based B-Cycle program implemented down along the Missouri River and by 36th Street. So it's we've got good results from the first recreation-based station, and we hope to see similar success in helping Bellevue implement their new station down in their area.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Second. All right. Anyone in the public wish to speak? Seeing none, directors? Director Thompson. I was looking earlier for our links, that map you just showed. Could we add that as a link to our website?
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a recreation tab on our website, and under the recreation area, we could put a link over to this, and they'd be able to see our station and others.
And side note, that our trail map is outdated. What's the... there's a lot of dashes on there that need to be filled in. I know, it's not related to this motion.
So we have an updated version of that from the design group that should be very soon here, getting the printed versions ready to hand out to people. Right. But it will include updates.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? I've got one that didn't see any hands. Eric, on the money, is it the revenues for this site out here, do we see any return of money?
We do not. That goes back to fund the maintenance. They come out every few weeks and check the tire pressure and then do a general check on the bicycles. If needed, they take them back to the shop, work on them a little bit, and bring them back. Right now, we're down a few bicycles because they're being tuned up, essentially. But that covers the cost of the maintenance. And ours currently is doing well. So we originally thought that we might have to work with B-Cycle to find sponsorship. Currently, our logo is on both the station and the bikes themselves, and we thought we might offer that to someone else for some level of sponsorship to pay for that maintenance, but we've exceeded the revenue expectations, and so we do not need to offer that to others for sponsorship. So our station is doing very well financially to cover all the costs.
Yeah, an ongoing question related to this, and around Omaha, dealing with Omaha Parks or whoever, do you see more requests coming in for us to cost share on more bicycles in other parts of town?
I don't know. We haven't talked to Omaha Parks about that, but if you look at that map, this would be the third location essentially on the kind of the West Papio corridor. Walnut Creek, WP 6 and 7, Zerinsky, 15A are all on West Papio as well. I think that B-Cycle would like to make the West Papio Creek and Trail into kind of a recreation corridor. What the future of that looks like, probably partnering with the local agencies who are responsible for those installations. But we haven't really had any specific discussions with them about it yet.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Director Jack?
Just one quick question. You say it's successful here. What does that mean? How many rentals per day or week or month?
I think in the first 18 months since we installed it, we had, I want to say, on the order of 800 rides. Something like two a day, which is pretty good. Last week, there was a family of seven who came out and checked them all out. I got a great photo of them. There were people checking some out this morning. Down by the Bob Carey Bridge is like cheating. They have like 10,000 rides or something because people go to the bridge, jump on a bike, go across. Mm-hmm. So after that, there's maybe a few thousand by the riverfront, and then we're next. And below that, hundreds per year on the rest of the network, but we're doing better than most of the other stations right now.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Thank
you. Yes.
Peter?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred
Conley?
Hi.
Chairperson? Yes. I believe that concludes our agenda. Thank you.
Time is 7:34. We'll call the meeting of the FEL subcommittee to order. The notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted on the rear wall as well as outside the corridor. With that, quorum call, please. Ellen, Fred, would you fill in, please?
Sure.
Here. John Conley? I need an excuse to add. Thompson?
Here.
Please? And chairperson?
Yes. And as usual, I will impose a 3-minute time limit on those from the general public that wish to speak on a given issue. And moving ahead, review and recommendation. Proof of publication I do have before me, rather. And number 6, review and recommendation of the...
Adopt the agenda.
Adopt the agenda.
Oh, man, I'm pretty screwed up. I don't want to get out of here.
Jim Thompson made the motion.
Okay, let's approve the agenda.
There's...
So move.
The second?
Yeah, I move Fred second. Fred,
thank you, I'm sorry. Roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Hi.
Yes. And I do, as I said before, I have proof publication before me. Item 6, review and recommendation of FY 2019 budget draft 2, General Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attached for your review is the second draft of the fiscal year 2019 budget. At August 9th board meeting, we'll have a public input and approval of the 2019 budget as presented. The final budget will be approved and the adoption of the property tax levy at the September 13th, 2018 Board of Directors meeting. It hasn't changed a whole lot since the first draft back in July. The changes that were made are highlighted in yellow, and then also in you look in the inside of your packet or inside of your notebook, there is a list of the all the changes that were made, and you can go through that. But simply, they were either updated estimates or updated projections from the previous budget that was presented. Also, there was some adjustments made to, for example, at Elkhorn Crossing, we had to we're going to have to replace some grass because of the flooding. So we had to add some costs there, as well as some maintenance items here at the Chaco Hills recreation area that need to be done. So those are the only changes that were made. The overall total requirements for the budget is $71,435,340. Property tax requirement is $24,319,072. The tax levy at this budget is 0.037797, which is the same as last year. So that would be the 13 out of 14 years that we've kept the mill levy the same and lowered it for the overall budget. We have anticipated a 2.5% increase in the valuations. However, last year we received about a 4.5 increase. So we won't get final valuations until the end of August, and so those will be reflected in the final draft that gets presented in September. I will say that several items remain underfunded that we had to cut to get to the continue to keep the current levy as it is or as it was. Also, we're about $7 to $8 million short in the watershed fund for the purchase of right-of-way. We have way more offers to buy land for reservoirs than we have the ability to fund. I'm anticipating by the beginning of next year that will be close to $15 million, $13 to $15 million of right-of-way that we could purchase for projects. However, again, we simply do not have those funds. So we'll continue to work on that, continue to come up with strategies of how we go about and satisfy those. But every month, literally, we have one or two meetings. In fact, I have one next week with a landowner that is looking for some type of answers of when we could possibly purchase their land that they want to sell. And they're not really wanting to wait till 2050 or 2060 to make those sales. So that continues to put stress, obviously, on the budget to continue to try to meet those demands and get those projects built. As comparison to other entities, tax levies, the district has always been under that 2%. So if you look at your tax bill, the NRD is always less than 2% of the total property tax bill. The total requirements, 90% of our revenue does come from Douglas and Sarpy counties, and then the rest is divided up between the other counties further north. So this budget does propose a minimum operations to meet the district's operation and requirements, and it is a proposed balanced budget, which is required by state law, so that's not a surprise to anyone there. Again, we're requesting the same mill levy as last year, and once again, 13 out of 14 years that you guys have done a great job keeping that mill levy static or actually reducing it. So I'd be happy to take any questions. We went over it pretty thoroughly as far as the budget workshop last month. And again, it hasn't changed all that much except for the items that are listed on that list. And they're highlighted in yellow in your budget worksheet. So if you have any questions, let me know. I'd be happy to answer anything. And we have staff here.
Can we get a motion?
I move a staff recommendation.
Second.
Anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? And directors?
One question. When did you say the final valuation will be known?
They're around August 20th.
that week. They kind of trickle in. Some maybe give you a preliminary one. We haven't even heard of a preliminary evaluation yet. So those are typically that week, though.
Dr. Leahy?
Yeah, it's good to assume that 2.5% and be conservative, but the question, if we do get something like we saw in the past 3 years around that 4%, let's say, it'd be a windfall of extra revenue. What is the priority for that revenue? Would it be to store away for potential right-of-way buyouts like you talked about, or would it be some of those programs and projects that got put on the chopping block to keep the mill levy?
The first priority would be to restore the cuts that to those projects and programs to get it under its current levy. Then with any additional revenue, that obviously would be, I mean, we need a ton in the watershed fee, and we're not going to get that. But that I think we could, you know, obviously we would work with the board to where do you want to put those additional revenues, or do you want to scale back the levy even further? So that would be a discussion to have with the board in September.
Do you have a list, or do you already know, or can you email it out between now and September, those programs that were cut that would come back on should the mill levy be around 4 or 4.2, whatever?
Yeah, I can give you where we trend.
So we can, like, have a priority, okay, this is what we expect to see come back, I can assuming.
Further questions of the directors?
You said we can discuss that. When would we discuss that? We don't know until August 20th.
Right. You discuss it before the we discuss it at the subcommittee, and then when we adopt the budget on Thursday, then we could make those changes before the adoption. So,
in September.
Yep.
And that's going to be in Dakota City again?
That's correct. So we will attempt to generate at least a couple options so we have those so we can do that. So
we'll make recommendations, obviously.
Further questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Rick Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Item 8, review the recommendation of the Thompson Creek Levy Improvement.
Can we go 7 first?
Oh, jeez.
Man. You want to get out of here?
I'm just really off tonight. Okay. Review and recommendation of FY 2019 budget bid cancellation 1% resolution. General Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Each year we put this before the board. If you look on the back page, it kind of gives you the historical vote of the board. We need a supermajority, basically 9 affirmative votes for 75% of the board, not just those present, but the entire board. Obviously, the state restricts funds that are allowable increases. You're restricted to 2.5%, but the board can also choose to increase that limit by an additional 1%, and that kind of basically hedges a little bit against inflation. And then we also listed the 2.5% lid applies to these general expenditures that are listed, and then we also have listed the lid exception. So it's passed before, and it hasn't passed, so you need 9 votes for it to do it. It doesn't necessarily equate directly to a tax increase. Because you approve the 1% doesn't mean your tax levy is going to go up 1%. It simply allows the district more room to meet and get under that 2.5% lid limit that the state has imposed on us. So we would recommend approval.
Is there a motion?
I move with the staff recommendation.
Second.
Is there any comments from the general public? Directions? Seeing none, roll call.
Rick Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Jim? Here, Mr. Chairman? Number 8 now?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Great.
Review and recommendation of Thompson Creek Levy Improvement Project Permanent Easement Agreement with the City of La Vista. Martin Freeman. Good evening, Martin.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks, Bill. You can scroll down maybe there in the bottom map. That's good. First of all, this project is located near Harrison Street and 66. Harrison's actually the upper part of the map. 66th Street. This is called the La Vista Sports Complex. I don't know what the official name is, but it's basically it's soccer fields and then softball complex. At the very bottom of this map, district back in 2017, actually ending in 2017, relocated these levees away from the creek. They were at this location. This is an older map. There's an occur map available, but now they're somewhere in through here. And so at the time we did that work, this whole area was disturbed, and the district acquired about 3 acres of easement from La Vista for this project at no cost. They also provided soil for the project and worked throughout the project with us to move sewer lines onto their property and things like that. At the time the district purchased this property, you know, next map, Bill, there was a 1.6-acre property purchase. It included a house as this property right here. And so the original levee was in this location. The new levee is over here. That impact on that lot was such that the district had to buy the whole property because there wasn't anything really left. You basically destroyed the property by taking half of it, and the house was part of that acquisition. So what's remaining beyond the levee footprint, levee right-of-way, is basically this strip of land here, which is 8.812 acres. And so what we're suggesting tonight to you as a board is that La Vista worked with us on this project. Again, at the time of the acquisition, they provided 1.34 acres of temporary easement, 1.64 acres of permanent easement, which basically is where the levee is setting today. So the levee is setting on previous soccer field area right away. And so in addition, we moved the sewer line onto their property away from the levee, which was also very important. So a lot of things happened here at La Vista to make this work, but bottom line is they were very cooperative. And so we're proposing tonight that you would grant them the easement to utilize this 0.812-acre property for recreational purposes, such as could be an extension of some of their soccer field area, or it could be a parking lot. But the district would retain ownership of this property, so in the future, you need to somehow modify this levee. You can tell them these things have to go. The levee has to be modified in this spot, and you have the ability to do that without actually purchasing the land back from them. So we think it's smart to make an easement for them, but we think it's also good to be cooperative with our neighbor who has given a lot to this project to make it work. Again, it just benefits the list, obviously, but this has ended up to be a good project, and there's some extra land that could be put to good use rather than us have to mow it, you know, or we could plant trees on it, but basically that's the uses we probably have for it, either mow it or plant trees on it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions you have regarding the recommendation tonight.
I'd like to move staff recommendation.
Yes, second?
Second.
Thank you. Any comments from the general public? Questions? Seeing none, roll call.
John Conley?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fred Conley?
Aye.
Yes. Item number 9, review and recommendation of land acquisition for West Australian Regional Basin number 4. And do we need to go exec?
Not much.
Okay.
Can you go to the map, please, Bill? So we were approached last August by the owner of a piece of land at the WP4 project. This one is located in Gretna. This is 204 Street, Highway 6 and 31 here, and Schramm Road. The structure will be located right here. The owner is this piece right here, track number 3. It is about 20 acres, 20.27 acres of land. They approached us last August wanting to sell. We had just started the design for this structure, so we told them we were not ready, but they've been asking and asking and asking. We've completed the preliminary design now. So we have before you a purchase agreement. The district did commission an appraiser for this, an appraisal for this property. The appraised amount for these 20 acres is $1,010,000. The seller has agreed to accept payment over 3 years, with the first payment being due August 31st of 2019, which would be our fiscal year 20.
There are no other fees or interest associated with that. They did, if we do default on those payments, they would then assess interest, but we don't anticipate that being an issue. So we do recommend that you agree or approve this agreement tonight, and I can answer any questions.
I can move staff recommendation.
Second.
Second.
Thank you.
Anybody from the general public wish to make a comment? Directors. Seeing none, roll call.
Johnson?
Yes.
Greg Conley?
Aye.
John Conley?
Yes.
Yes. And if Chairman Thompson agrees, I think our agenda is done. We stand adjourned.
And we should adjourn.